The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia Online. My name is Jason Freeman. I'm a producer and editor here in the Free Library's author events office, and I'm pleased to be here to introduce tonight's guest, Deborah Willis. Deborah Willis, PhD, is the author of Posing Beauty, African American Images from the 1890s to the Present, Reflections in Black, History of Black Photographers, 1840 to the Present, and Michelle Obama, The First Lady in Photographs, among other books. University professor and chair of the Department of Photography and Imaging at the Tisch School of the Arts at New York University, she is the recipient of MacArthur and Guggenheim Fellowships. And in addition to exhibiting her work all over America, Dr. Willis has curated numerous photography exhibitions, served as a museum consultant, and has appeared in and consulted on several media projects. She is here tonight with her latest book, The Black Civil War Soldier, A Visual History of Conflict and Citizenship. In it, Dr. Willis offers a far-ranging but intimate photographic essay about Black experiences in the U.S. Civil War from the conflict's outset all the way to the turn of the century. Henry Louis Gates Jr. proclaims that, quote, "The Black Civil War Soldier is both a major contribution to Civil War studies and an album of our ancestors' journey at the critical hour of American history that belongs to all of us as descendants of their sacrifice." High praise indeed. So let's get right to it. Deb, thank you so much for being here, and please take it away.
Thank you, Jason. I spent many hours as a young girl and a student in the city of Philadelphia studying and also exploring the library, so it's an honor to be here. This talk mentioned by Jason, The Black Civil War Soldier, it's a story about, it examines the public memory of the Civil War through photographs, and letters and diary entries. I was fascinated when I began thinking about this, the experience of Civil War soldiers. And as we consider it, so I wanted to just say that this book is a synthesis of the of a history that is both difficult and desired when we consider public monuments on slavery and the Civil War that are missing. And at this time, the debates are going on. We also know that a number of people attend Civil War reenactments, and as many people attend Juneteenth celebrations. So there's something about looking at images for me that's revealing. It also forces me to question narratives about Black life and Black people. And so I want to walk through this experience and show you some of the images that transform my experience, why I wanted to create this book. And so I'm going to introduce this slideshow. So here, the title of this talk is Retelling Stories in Photography about the Black Civil War Soldier. It's a talk that focuses on a number of experiences. And I wanted to start off with the cover of the book, as well as the images, the important aspect of posing. And as we think about posing in the photographer studio, the soldiers you will see, many of them are using the backdrop that expresses citizenship. So to me, and reading these images in the 21st century, I see these soldiers in the 19th century. They believed that they were free and they were fighting for their freedom and that they were citizens. And recognizing that, we see the American flag. And we also see the experience of the artist, the photographer who created the images, because they're also painting the backdrops. So we see life parts of this story. This is an image that's in the National African American Museum of History and Culture. But we see the importance of this image. We see that it's a cased image, it's a tintype. Close up, you'll see the US button. You'll see this sense of bravery where the soldier has the gun to his chest, where he is sworn to an oath to fight for freedom. Most recently, I was in a conversation with a curator in Richmond and discovered that the image that I used for the cover of the book was identified by a group of artists based on this projection project by Alex Creek and Dustin Klein. And it's the projection of Sergeant Nimrod Burke on the Robert E. Lee Monument at Marcus Davis Peters Circle in Richmond, Virginia, February 5th, 2021, and in terms of reclaiming the monument. So here we begin to see the importance of this image in the contemporary moment. And these are two artists who are projecting images from Black Lives Matter experience, but also through the history of the Civil War. And this is the image that I found with the help of a curator at the Museum of Fine Art, Virginia Museum of Fine Arts. And we see Sergeant Nimrod Burke. He was born in 1836, died in 1914, describes as the veteran of the American Civil War. His great-great-great-grandson was able to identify the image where he was born in Prince William County. We see the image here of him without the casing, but also that the research found that his gravestone, his tombstone is also in Ohio. And it says, this is the story of my great-great-grandfather, Nimrod Burke. So the story, it becomes why this image to me is really important. I was able to identify it, you know, after the book was published, but the experience that this experience is still alive. And this experience is important that we know 4 years of the Civil War, but people are still having a conversation about this experience. This is a portrait of Frederick Douglass. And Frederick Douglass is one of the most important people from that experience because he's written and talked about the experience of the war. He also encouraged Black soldiers to join once they were able to. He spoke to Abraham Lincoln about it. And it says it was the Civil War that inspired Douglass to write and speak on photography. Like many Americans, he believed that photographs and pictures greatly contributed to the secession and of course the war. And he wrote, "Once you let the Black man get upon his person the brass letter US, let him get an eagle on his button and a musket on his shoulder, bullets in his pocket, and there is no power on earth or under earth, which can deny that he has earned the right to citizenship in the United States." So again, but this is taken during the war years of the 1860s. So we see this formidable look, this focus that he has, and we can see the expression on his face. He also wrote the text for this To Colored Men, 54th Regiment, African descent, joining the war. So this is the type of image that why soldiers joined the 54th. This is a photograph of a man who joined the 54th. And then as we think about contemporary artists who are looking for ways to tell the story about this experience is Carrie Mae Weems. And so Carrie Mae Weems, as I consider this image here, she says, "I looked and looked to see what so terrified you." And she did this in 2006. She's looking at the history of Black images and the experience of how Black people have been perceived. And she's wearing an antebellum type dress and it's made like a quilt. And she wants to acknowledge and confirm and affirm her beauty and her humanity. She created images of looking at women who were enslaved and went to the Sea Islands to make images about the experience of enslaved people on plantations in Columbia, South Carolina. This is Drana and Dahlia, who were photographed by J.T. Zealy, a South Carolina photographer. He was hired by Louis Agassiz to prove that Black people were subhuman. And this is an experience that she wanted to interrogate through the images. Black people are stereotyped in many ways. There were images also, this is a plantation image of a man who owns this property. We see women and white women and Black women and men and Black men and women and children in this frame. So we see about 17 people on this plantation. We see the activity. We also see the two Black figures who are in the four in the middle ground. One's holding a hat, and the older girl, and the younger girl has a broom. So there's performing the labor of the experience of performing for the photographer. The Black man is the driver. And thinking about this image, which was recently shared with me, we also see a pole, a tree stump. And curious about that tree stump, is it a reference to the brutality of slavery in terms of the whippings? Looking at the land, these are plantation experiences of slave quarters on a plantation. There are also images that, you know, discovered that I found an important way of telling the story. I was interested in finding a way to create a moment about the soldiers, their sense of commitment to the war, their expression about posing, and then collectors. And I met a number of collectors who had photographs, and they shared photographs with me. And this is a portrait of Richard Etheridge in a private collection. And he wrote a letter to his former captain. And he says, "I have the honor to attend here with my kind regards for your future welfare, trusting that in days to come, the enclosed business may be the means to bring you a pleasant recollections of the days past." Etheridge was born into slavery in Roanoke, Virginia. But the important point for me is to see this letter. And he says, I trust that you may receive your just reward in heaven and your humble servant. Because he respected his captain and they had a really good relationship, that he wrote him a letter of thanking him over time. There's another point in terms of the research I had. Unusual experience with the research, and one was going to the National Archives. I was looking for ways to tell the story of Susan Brewster. I wanted to include women. I thought the books that I found in my research, women were missing from this experience. And I met a historian, Millington Lockwood, who said he's also doing research on that the period. And I had an opportunity to go to the pension records, and I found a letter by Susan Brewster, it was a photograph in the collection. And she wrote to the pensioners and when her husband passed, and she was trying to obtain his pension. She described him, he was a blacksmith and a tailor. "This is my only photograph I have of him. Please return it," which you can see it was never returned. And his story is she tried to prove her marriage, where they were married. She's mentioned the date in 1867. She described the experience of they had a daughter, that he was injured. Lost a sight in one eye. She tried a number of times and was unable to receive his pension. And never received it and never received the photograph. Photograph of a washerwoman. This is a young woman who also is posed. She in Richmond, Virginia. And we see American flag pinned to her chest and the US brass button. So I assume that a soldier gave her the US brass button in honor or respect for her work, but again, Frederick Douglass is writing about the image and the photography. The servant girl can now see a likeness of herself because of photography. These are images that, as I mentioned earlier, that soldiers visited the studios. They also took their families, their children, and their wives to the studio. Many of them did not return because of illness or death, but they had the opportunity to keep their family close to their hearts because of the photographer's studio. This is a couple. This is not the letter that the wife wrote to her husband, but I'm using this as an example. Again, the photographer's handicraft in terms of tinting the photograph in gold. And the letter writer, Martha, writes, "My dear husband," she received a letter from him and she was pleased to receive a letter from him. She talked about the abuse that she's received on the plantation after he left. She says, "Tell Isaac that his mother would like to see him, but please bring," she got clothes for him. She was sorry that the exchange between the mother and other friends within the experience of the war, and that there's a lot of grief and death, and they were looking for him to furlough soon. "Farewell, my dear husband, from your wife, Martha." These are the stories that humanize this experience for me, where women are receiving letters and writing letters. This is a march where men leave. This is a runaway slave ad that was created by Louis Manicol because of a woman he had photographed. Her name was Dolly. And again, another experience of how photography is telling a story about this experience. It says, "Ran away from the yard corner from the Jackson and Broad Street in Savannah, in Augusta, Georgia, on the evening of Tuesday, 7 April 1863, a woman, Dolly, whose likeness is seen here. She's 30 years of age, light complexion, hesitates somewhat when spoken to, and is not a very healthy woman, but rather good looking with a fine set of teeth. Never changed her owner and has been a house servant always. It is thought that she had been enticed off by some white man, being herself a stranger to the city." Charleston family posted in the Augusta police station a $50 reward, a lot of money. The experience of looking at this image, we begin to imagine the stories that this is, he's feeling betrayed, that she left. It could have been a Union soldier. It could have been, as Barbara Proudhammer has suggested, that it was her light-skinned lover. So here are the letters and how these letters are circulating and the experience of the research. Susie King Taylor in 1902 wrote a diary about her experience as a nurse, teacher, and basically a cook. So she says that, "I taught a great many of the comrades in Company E to read and write when they were off duty. Nearly all were anxious to learn." This is an important point, another crucial point about that experience of soldiers. Many of them wanted to write their names when they received their pay, as opposed to an X. They could write their names. And she says her husband taught when he was able to as well. This is the a Negro regiment, and we see this in Beaufort, South Carolina. We see this is one of the first Black regiments, and you can see the men standing erect. We see this experience as one of the most important letters or accounts that I found was in the Black newspaper. And this is not the soldier Garland White, but this is an illustration of a soldier where a woman, when Richmond was, when the Union Army took over Richmond, there were a number of Black people in the town waiting and cheering the soldiers as they entered into the state, into the city. There were a number of soldiers who knew Garland White, and there is an older woman who was looking for a soldier by the name of Garland White. She meets him and she says, "What is your name, sir?" "My name is Garland White." "What is your mother's name?" "Nancy." "Where was you born?" "In Hanover County in this state." Where were you sold from?" "From this city." "What was the name of the man who bought you?" "Robert Toombs." "Where did he live?" "In the state of Georgia." "Where did you leave him?" "At Washington." Where did you go then? To Canada. Where do you live now? In Ohio. This is your mother, Garland, whom you are now talking to and has spent 20 years of grief about her son. Again, why this book is so personal to me is we begin to see mothers whose sons were sold into slavery in south of where she lived on the plantation. But the fact that she followed, she was concerned, she knew how to identify him. She knew that he lived in, he moved to another state in Georgia, that he also moved to Canada and he lived in Ohio. She knew all about him. So that in terms of, you know, we think about the internet and tweeting and circulation of information, this is how Black people were able to use information through the Underground Railroad. This is a photographer's studio, a campsite, on the campsite in a tent. Portraits of soldiers from Port Hudson. And again, men of color to arms. We see 3 years service, valor and heroism. And then the question, are freemen less brave than slaves? So then there's a question of masculinity asking here. Our last opportunity has come. Men of color, brothers and fathers, we appeal to you. You know, strike now. And then they're trying to get Black soldiers to join. And they joined. And these are some of the people in South Carolina and in Louisiana. This is just images of soldiers. Alexander Gardner's photograph of Abraham Lincoln. Another image of a soldier, of a servant who's in the soldier's uniform from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, which is now Pottstown. And we begin to understand the importance of how he felt about his role in the war. He was the first Black man that was injured in the war when troops from Pennsylvania heading down to Washington, then to Virginia, to Richmond to fight. That when they entered Baltimore, rocks were thrown and he was injured. He posed upon his return, and we can see the handkerchief that he kept to wipe the blood off his head is in the pocket of the shirt. So we begin to see the sense of performance of a soldier post-war and the experience that he is carrying his biography through this photograph. There were sailors and soldiers, journalists such as William Henry Johnson, who covered the war. He wanted to join in 1861. Black soldiers could not join. He decided to travel with a regiment from Connecticut to take notes and to write about the experience, and he published his experience. 50,000 brave Union loving men get beaten. You know, what could happen with that experience? And that's when, and then also Heritage, Alexander Heritage Newton from Philadelphia, he joins, he also returns and becomes a member of Mother Bethel Baptist Church. We see him pose. He says, I was born under the regime of slavery, a free child, my mother being a free woman. My father was a slave. So that in my family, I've learned what slavery was. I felt its curse in my bones. And I longed for an opportunity and the power to play the part of a Moses on behalf of my people. I suppose this was the wild dream of every child born during slavery, to fight for their freedom. And he wrote a book as well. In 1861, a number of soldiers who left for the war left to families, and they were in orphanages. They had left their children, and some grew up in the orphanage, such as James Henry Gooding. We know stories about the experience because they were, whites burned the orphanage. And so here we begin to see the children who had to leave and move to Brooklyn as a result of this. The contraband who served at the 13th Massachusetts Infantry, this is a group. that were who left the plantations, leaving. They were free, but they were not citizens, so they were called contraband. And we see a pregnant young woman who is looped, her arm looped around an older woman. We see young boys. We see a woman who's dressed as a nurse. We see this sense of family in a collective moment, not in terms of familia, but in terms of the experience of family. But the woman, older woman, has a hat, and she's holding that hat so that we can see her face. We can imagine that she desired to take her hat off, but these are people who are looking into the camera, and they believe that they had a future, and they pose for the photographer. We begin to see the health hospitals, hospital workers, including nurses and some of the young people who work there in terms of washing women. We know that a number of people died as a result of the war and because of the diseases, that 30,000 died of infections and diseases because unsanitary conditions. This is an image that circulated around the world, and we know this was circulated in Scotland. And a man who was visiting Boston says that he bought a pro-Lincoln political photograph, and he's sharing that image. But this is Gordon, who was one of, known as also a contraband, but he's also decided to leave the plantation where he lived in Mississippi, Louisiana, cross lines, went into Baton Rouge. He was photographed by the surgeons, and you can see the number of scars on his back. So that experience of after he was inspected. We see that image in that was in Harper's Weekly. There's a photograph of him when he entered the war, and then we see the scarred back, and then a photograph or an illustration of him in a soldier's uniform. Unfortunately, have not seen the soldier's uniform, Gordon in uniform. But I, there is an image of him in the book of him when he entered the camp. Images of Civil War in terms of the Confederate soldiers and the formerly enslaved men, who young men who worked with him. Who the young Confederate soldier was injured, and they stayed together during and after the war. Images that have, I can imagine, families. We see a woman who's in mourning, and she's in mourning dress and mourning clothing, standing next to a soldier. It could be her husband could have died. The experience is Tara Hunter. While women asserted claims of citizen wife or soldier's wife, they were not readily granted that. And so we began to see how women became a part of the war, because they were washing clothes, writing letters, also maintaining the family. Groups of soldiers, images that, and different moments. This is a school by Harriet Jacobs and her daughter. They taught at a friend's school in Alexandria, Virginia. Another school in on a plantation in Beaufort, South Carolina during the war. Harriet Tubman's photograph that was recently discovered in, and it's in the collection at the Smithsonian. She says, if you want a taste of freedom, keep going. And that's in terms of her way of getting people to move north. And this is a young photograph of her, and it's just a beautiful pose, framing of the experience of her as she imagines her life in the studio. Colonel Robert Shaw, who was killed one of the most important battles of the war with the 54th, and he's posed here. And he wrote letters, he wrote diary entries. He was newly married to a young wife that he left, and he, and I just used some of the phrases that he wrote about his experience. These are some of the Black soldiers that are part of the 54th. It's in this album that's in the collection at the Smithsonian. And the range of images. Photograph of Charles Douglas, the son of Frederick Douglass, when he entered the war, and a photograph of his other son, Louis Douglass, when he entered the war. So we began to see the importance of photography, the importance of bravery as they pose. And you can read the sense of masculinity, the purpose, pose, purposeful poses, but also that love. And this is the first time we can see the mother love with Garland, mother writing, explaining, following his story. But then we see love through the relationship of Lewis Douglas with his fiance Amelia. And he writes to her, "I have been in two fights and I'm unhurt. I'm about to go to another, I believe, tonight." And then he says, "You know, if I survive, I shall write you a long letter. DeForest of your city is wounded. George Washington is missing. Jacob Carter is missing. Charles Reason wounded." And they're all in the hospital. Here he says, "My dear girl, I'm away. Do not fret yourself to death." So he's like caring and concerned about her welfare. He's concerned about the war. He's also informing her about the experiences of different people. So when we think, why I wanted to include these letters, because when I was in school, we were told that Black people couldn't read or write, that they hadn't a desire to read or write, or they hadn't a desire to even think about family. So finding these stories that are in the archives or in private collections, central to reframing the experience of Black people. Here's Amelia Logan that she writes to her fiance, to Charlotte Fortin, who was a Philadelphian, who also left Philadelphia to teach one of the freedom schools in South Carolina and in the Sea Island. And she meets Colonel Shaw. She writes, she says, "Colonel Shaw came to take tea with us. Afterwards, we went to the Shout," which was kind of a spiritual praise house. And she says, I'm perfectly charmed with Colonel Shaw. He seems to be in every way one of the most delightful persons I've ever met." And she describes the experience of the Shout. She says, "I've seen him once, but I cannot help feeling a very, really affectionate admiration for him. We had a very pleasant talk on the moonlit piazza. We went to the praise house to see the Shout. She was delighted that he loved the experience of listening to the hymns. And he asked her to make a copy of some of the hymns for him." Here is a page from her diary. And this is, you know, a sad story. This is Sergeant Henry Stewart, 23 years old, from Adrian, Michigan. He was enlisted in April 4th, 1863, and he died September 27th, 1863. His estate was paid $50. He died because of diseases in the regiment hospital in Morris Island. We read a lot about the deaths and mentioned in terms of experience. Christian Fleetwood, he wrote, you know, when he received his hat cap, he says, when he receives his forage cap, his kepi, a brass bugle above it, the number 4, a uniform coat, a blue jacket, an overcoat, one pair of light blue woolen trousers, one pair of booties, brogans, 2 pairs of drawers, 2 pairs of stockings, 2 shirts, a knapsack, a canteen, a haversack, a case for carrying rations, a cartridge box. And so a blank, 2 blankets and 1 wool cap. So all of this, he's writing what it felt like when he received this. But he also writes later when he's traveling, woke up in the morning, the weather was fine, it's warm. He writes about the food and these little 2x3 books, the experience of soldiers. And then there were doctors, there were surgeons. And this is a photograph of Anderson Abbott. He was appointed an acting assistant surgeon in 1863. He worked in the Contraband Hospital in Washington, DC. During the war, he returned to Ontario, he returned from Ontario because he left. He wanted to receive a medical degree. He went to Toronto College for that. And he wrote and tried to be a part of the war, be a part of this sense of citizenship and use his skills to take care of the Black soldiers. Another one, John Rapier. He is he's a doctor in 1864. In one of his letters, he writes home to one of his uncles. He says that I drew $100 less war tax, $2.50. My draft was in favor of acting assistant surgeon rank, first lieutenant. I read the address several times. I liked it, though I confess it read strange to me. So he's like loving his new rank. He's loving the fact he's being paid. And he says, I do not like the U.S. service. However, half a loaf is better than none. No loaf. It's better to have a blue coat than no military coat. I would rather have the Mexican green or the English purple. So he writes about his political affiliations. He's aware of the war. He meets Frederick Douglass during that time period. He's invited to dinner, and he was really proud to attend. And so there's letters within that framing. Another, Alexander Augusta, another one who left for Toronto, you know, in terms of Canada to study. He wrote to President Lincoln asking to fight for, to fight and to work. He said he was compelled to leave his native country because of the prejudice, because against the color of his skin. And so these are the stories that I'm sharing. And I know it's about 8:10 now, so I'm going to flip through some of the images of from the book Sojourner Truth. These are some of the washerwomen, you know, some of the cabins that some of the people lived. These are two lieutenants who also photograph the Black troops on their Black troops in their camp. And here are some of the things that they wrote about them. Like here's Sergeant, Samuel Martin, a sergeant, very light eyes and hair, light complexion, uses no tobacco or stimulant, appreciated by his officers. Here's James Roberts, a drummer. He was a free man when he entered. Now he's hard to manage. He's the bass drummer, stubborn and reckless. And you can see by personality, his head is cocked to the side. He is reckless in terms because he's not buttoning his coat. So we begin to see personalities that are developed in here. Different images from the war. As I mentioned about marriage, this is a couple or a marriage license. And this is Edmonia Lewis's bust of Colonel Shaw. And she created this bust when he left. And so we begin to think how monuments are developed, that she, you know, of course he was a prominent citizen of Boston, and he was a leader of Black troops. And so this bust is, this is one of the important moments of the war and after his death, because he was honored in many ways. W.B. Du Bois organized an exhibition, and these are some of the photographs of the Medal of Honor winners, Emancipation Day in Richmond. And then I'll end with this of the soldiers from the 54th, where the unfortunate death of Colonel Shaw and many other Black soldiers. There's a painting on the back where families are honoring the dead soldiers, but they're also teaching their children. So we begin to see art on the wall here at the turn of the century. And a contemporary artist here, Wendell White, is looking at the archive. Wendell lives in New Jersey. And again, we see how he's using the archive to tell the story. There are images of parades that's in the Bloxon collection. Carrie Mae Weems photographs the monument in Boston. And then William Earl Williams, he created this photograph. He has a project photographing monuments and the Civil War fights and the area where a number of the soldiers fought the battles. And this is a monument to Sergeant Kearney in Norfolk, Virginia. And so I'll stop here. And I see there are a few questions and would like to open up. I'm going to read the questions. And from Karen Jennings, do you believe that these photos would be sought to address reparations for Black Americans and their descendants? Would be sought to address? Possibly. It's important that this history needs to be told. And it's important that we recognize that Black soldiers were a part of this history. Peggy Hartzell, how many of the studio photographers were African-American? I found 3 African-American studio photographers, and there were other operators who worked with the white photographers. Roland Parsons, around this time, did Black people commission memorial photography and to have a likeness and keepsake of their dead? Yes. Do you think many photographs, this is Nicholas Phillips, do you think many photos of Black soldiers were lost during the Jim Crow and civil rights era of Black soldiers were lost? Possibly, but they are discovering now. But the most fascinating part of this, Nicholas, is that the photographs have been in the National Archives. So they're there, they're not lost. And I believe that it's a possibility that families, of course, lost a lot during that time. And then there are some people who destroyed some of the photographs. So that's an important point. So there is a correction. Thank you, Karen Cater. Pottsville and Pottstown are 2 distinct places, communities, and has always been. Thank you. Winston Noble, were the photographers of Black Civil War soldiers generally Black or white? And there was someone approximating the statue of Brady or Gardner, whose work is tucked away in an archive somewhere. Someone had, and was there someone of the statue? There was a Black photographer, J.P. Ball, James Presley Ball, and he had a studio in Cincinnati, Ohio. And he was known as an activist and an abolitionist. There was a photographer, his studio was often visited by soldiers who were helping Blacks escape the war. And he was active. And some of his photographs are at the Library of Congress, in the Ohio Historical Society. And here we began to see, and I'm sure we can be able to find collections. There are a number of private collections that have Black photographers within their private collections. Craig Capello, sorry if I'm mispronouncing your last name. Any historical insight into the role Sojourner Truth played in the Civil War as a nurse and use of photography in the 1800s? Sojourner Truth talked often, and she was a nurse. Her grandson was a Civil War soldier, but she also talked about abolition as an activist. So her activities and her books are, there are a number of people who've written about her, and her story is important. Tom Rails, do you know if plantation owners documented their slaves using photographs? Yes, and that was the image of Dolly by Louis Manapult. Many of them documented there in the early images that I showed that Carrie Mae Weems made of Dahlia and Drana, that they were photographed at the request of Louis Agassiz, but also that they were owned by plantation owners. And so many of them were photographed by photographers, white photographers in the South. It's important also to note that there were days that Black people could enter the photographic studios during that time period, and whites could enter on other days, other times. And they were in Mississippi. I read that a photographer was photographing enslaved people who had an opportunity to pay for their own photographs, and the whites in the town of Mississippi chased the white photographer who was an itinerant photographer, moved from place to place, chased him out of town. And this is Penny Scott Sedley. Sorry if you've already discussed this, but I'm struck by the formal prose of the soldiers who we were taught were illiterate. Are we to take away that the letters were written in the hand of the soldiers themselves, or did others write for them? How do you explain the formal language? Some of the soldiers were educated and went to school. As I mentioned, the four soldiers who were surgeons, the Frederick Douglass's sons were also educated. They lived in the North, and others were educated through, because it was illegal to teach enslaved people how to read and write. So others who escaped slavery were able to study, and the ones who were enslaved were able, when they joined the war, they were able to learn to read and write with the help of white teachers and Black teachers, such as Laura and others during that time period. So it's important to note that also there were scribes, people who wrote for them. And so I included both letters that were written by scribes, but also letters were written by the soldiers themselves. Mason Freeman, or Fryman, can you talk about the process by which you came by these images? I'm interested in how you search museum, newspaper, historical society records, archives. Were other photographs produced from other personal sources, such as individual family collections? I started this research possibly about 15 years ago, but I could say longer, because when I worked at the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture, I noticed there were Civil War soldiers in the collections there, their photographs. And I was intrigued by that missing story that I missed in terms of never told that these soldiers existed. And I wanted to learn more. And I just started reading books and newspapers, finding newspapers that were written during that time period. Many of them were by abolitionists, white abolitionists, who were actively looking to find a solution to the war, or try to understand, to make a difference. And I went to historical societies in Boston and DC and Philadelphia and of course New York, visiting often when I traveled to other places like Ohio and also in Florida and Georgia. So I'm just thinking about all the places I've traveled in North Carolina. There are a number of collections that are online. And so I had the experience to have that opportunity to look at collections online, download and read letters. The most important part for me was to have the opportunity also to meet contemporary artists like Willie Williams and Carrie Mae Weems and Wendell White, who are also looking at the land and making images and doing research. So other historians told me stories, and we shared moments through that experience. This is Jacqueline Earle. Who are some of the photographers of the photographs? I mentioned that, and please feel free to buy the book. Von Michaels, or 150 years from now, how do you imagine our progenitors will look back on the photography of the racial justice movements of today? I think they'll be just like me. They will look at those images and question what happened. They'll be appalled, they'll be intrigued, and they'll also have the experience of see how activism has transformed their understanding of humanity. And this is exactly what I've experienced. Was color in the original photographs, or were they retouched? They were retouched. Sarah, it would be really interesting to hear a bit about how you conducted your research and found these images. So I just mentioned that. Greg Lasky, can you talk about the gorgeous framing of the decorations around many of the photographs? There were a number of framers, artists who were painters and craftsmen and woodworkers who were interested in making frames and for miniature paintings and also for daguerreotypes, tintypes, and ambrotypes. And so these were embellished and created by craftsmen. And it cost extra, of course, to have these placed in the framing of these. Some were gold, metal, different types of metal. Some were wood. Some were called gutta percha. And so these were the framing. Can you explain what is a MacArthur or a Guggenheim? There were awards that I received. Did Matthew Brady take photographs of Black soldiers? Yes. And were some of the African-American soldiers paid to stand in for white men who did not want to serve? In the South, they were not paid. There were Confederate Black soldiers who were forced to fight for the sons of the plantation owners who did not want to join the war. They were not paid because they were enslaved. Beverly Ingram, are you aware of other Black Civil War regiments other than the 59th? Yes, in the book, there are a number of others that are mentioned. And there are a range of stories about their experiences and the excitement that they had in leaving their states or cities to go place to Philadelphia had a training school for soldiers. There were a number of experiences that where I take personally because of I'm from Philadelphia and to see the activism of the abolitionists movement in Philadelphia was crucial to my research. And that's why I did a lot of research in Philadelphia. And yes, there are the names of some of the troops in the Philadelphia area. So I'd like to thank all of you, all 86 of you here, and say good night.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.